Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Avodah Zarah Daf Nun Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. The Gemara, with which we will be beginning, can be found by noticing the bow tie of the geometric form at the upper part of Daf Nun Aleph, and there is a number 2 that appears in the space to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. This is a second issue that Rav introduces concerning Avodas Kochavim She'oibdin Oysa B'Makel. The first one appeared on Daf Nun Amid Beis. Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Rabba Barvu, Omar Rav. Avodas Kochavim She'oibdin Oysa B'Makel. An idol that its style was to be worshipped with a stick. We saw on the previous Amid an idol like that, and its method of worship was through the banging of a stick in front of it, what was Rashi referred to as Kishkushe Makel. In this case, we're continuing with such an idol, and the Gemara says, Rav says, Shovar Makel Bifonel Chayov. If a person broke a stick in front of it, so he is guilty of idol worship, v'ne'eseres, and the stick is osur as a takruves. Let us take a look at the Rashi in the upper part of the page. Shovar makel lefonel chayov v'ne'eseres hamakel bein shavurso b'shvira, whether the nature of the service of the Avodah Zarah was through breaking sticks, bein she'ein avurso b'shvira havi avoda the hischayev, whether or not the service was through breaking of sticks. In other words, even if the service of this Avodah Zarah was not through stick breaking, it would still constitute an Avodah, a method of worship, and the practitioner would be guilty of a capital offense. V'havyo takroves le'aser, and the stick itself would be considered an offering to the idol, and it would become forbidden. Kinamoron, as was said earlier, to ke'ein zvichahi, that this is similar to slaughtering, in the sense that by slaughtering you have the severing of the simonim on the tzavor, the severing of the neck. So too here you have the severing of the stick. Rav's halacha goes on to say, Zorak makel lefoneha chayav, if one casts a stick, throws a stick in front of it, he's considered an offender of idolatry. However, the eino ne'eseres, the stick is not forbidden. Omar le Rava le Rav Nachman. Rava addresses Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman essentially was the one that quoted Rav's halacha. So Rava asks, Maishno shovar dehavyo le ke'ein zvicha. What's different about breaking, that we say the stick becomes forbidden in that it's like slaughtering? Zorak nami havyo le ke'ein zrika. Why not view the throwing of the stick like the zrika sadam, like the sprinkling of blood, where the blood is also thrown, so to speak, at the mizbeach? Amar le, so Rav Nachman answers, in order for something to be considered a takroves through zrika, bo'inon zrika mishtaberes v'lekor, it has to be a type of throwing that is in a sprinkle form, in droplets, which is characteristic of something like a liquid, specifically dam. The question now is, elameato, that you require the action to be something that's similar to that which is in the Beis HaMikdash. Avne Beis Markalis, the stones that are cast at the Markalis idol, Bameh Ye'asru, how do those stones become forbidden? a stone itself is a solid substance. It's not in a droplet form. So how can you consider the stones that are thrown at the Markalis like a takruvus and hence forbidden? And we know that the stones that are cast at the Markalis are forbidden. Amarle, Rav Nachman answers, Af ledidi kashili, v'sha'alte l'rabba baravua. I was troubled by this and asked Rabba baravua. By the way, Rabba baravua was the one that quoted Rav at the beginning of the sukkia. For Rabba baravua, he was troubled by this and he went to l'chiyo bar Rav. L'chiyo bar Rav, l'rav. The Amarle, and Rav answered that as far as the stones of Markalis are concerned, Nasa kimegadel avides kechovim. The stones are not prohibited as an offering to an idol. The stones are forbidden as an idol itself. Every stone that's thrown at the Markalis, you're in effect expanding megadel avides kechovim. You're increasing the idol itself. So the prohibition of the stones is based on it being an idol and not an offering to the idol. Ha'nicha, it is appropriate to say that the stones are usur as an idol. L'man d'omar avodes kechavim shel oved kechavim asura miyad. According to the opinion that says that an idol owned by an idol worshipper, by a Gentile, becomes forbidden immediately upon construction. So each stone that's thrown at the Markalis, that particular stone, you're in effect increasing the size of the original Markalis. You're building it, you're making it, bigger. At the point that you make it, even though it's not subsequently worshipped, that itself creates the prohibition. Elo lamandi omar ad sheteovei. There is another daya that says that the idol owned by a Gentile does not become forbidden until it's worshipped. So the stones that I threw at the Markalis should be allowed to holo polcha. That stone has not been worshipped. Every stone that I throw at it, in effect, is increasing the idol. It's building it up more, but it's not worshipped. Amarle, kol achas ve'achas nases avodes kechovim v'takrovis l'chaverto. Every stone that I throw at the Markalis, so the stone becomes part of the idol, so I'm building the idol, and every stone that I throw, in effect, is an offering to the stone that was thrown previously. Therefore, this stone that was thrown previously is now being worshipped through the currently thrown stone. So if you'll ask, how are the stones usur? Because, after all, they haven't been worshipped. The answer is they have been worshipped, because every subsequent stone is, in effect, a form of worship of the stone that was thrown previously. Well, if you follow this model you just carry it to its logical end, ihachi, the following question rises. Basraisa miha tishtri, the last stone that was thrown, should be allowed, according, of course, to this mandomar, that an idol does not become forbidden until it's worshipped. Now, the last stone was, in effect, an increase in the size of the idol, but where was it being worshipped? It's the last stone. No further stone is thrown at it. Omar lay, so he answers, Iyadis lo zil shakla. If you can identify the last stone, go ahead and take it. What he's really trying to say is you probably won't be able to recognize it, and therefore they're all usur. Rav Ashi Omar, Rav Ashi has a different explanation. Kol achas ve'achas naaseis takroves li'atzmo v'takroves l'chaverta. Each stone, in effect, is not only a form of worshipping the previous stone, but every tossing of the stone, in effect, constitutes an offering to itself. Therefore, the last one is forbidden as well. Let's take a look at the Rashi, Takroivas Liatzma, Shari Ein Lo Avoda Acheres, Elozrika. There is no other form of worship of the Markalis other than the throwing of the stones. And through the throwing of the stones, it becomes part of the idol itself, and it is also worshipped. Even the last one, Ne'eseres, Mishum Avodes Kechavim Atzma. It seems to me that this last phrase of Rashi, when he says that it's Ne'eseres Mishum Avodes Kechavim Atzma, it becomes Osir as an idol itself, we have to add it's an idol itself that is also worshipped, because we're working within the Manda Omar that an idol itself does not become prohibited until it is worshipped. So we have to say that the last stone thrown was in effect being self-worshipped. It's a built-in worshipping of it as it becomes part of the idol. Tanan, Motzo Beroishoi Ksus Umois Oikelim Hare Elu Mutorin. If one finds on the head of an idol clothing, cash, or vessels, they are permissible. Parchile Anovim Vaatre Shel Shibolim Vieno Shmonim Usiltos. If one finds clusters of grapes, Atre Shel Shibolim would be crowns made of sheaves of grain. Wine, oil, or flour. The chol davar shikayotzi b'korav legabi mizbeach osur, and likewise anything else that's offered to the mizbeach, and you found that on the head of an idol, those substances would be forbidden. So bishlamo yeno shmonim v'siltos, with regard to wine, oil, and flour, iko ke'ein pnim. You have the element of something that's similar to that which is done in the Beis HaMikdash. V'iko ke'ein zriko mishtaberes. And these items also, if they're thrown at them as at the idol, you have the zriko mishtaberes, the idea of it being in droplet form or granular form, so that it resembles zrika sadam that was in the Beis HaMikdash. And as we've mentioned on numerous occasions, in order for someone to be in violation of the service of the Avodah Zarah, and particularly in order for the item, specifically for the item offered to become forbidden as a takroives, it has to be something similar to that which was in the Beis HaMikdash. So that's characteristic of Yeno Shmona Vesiltos, wine, oil, and flour. Elo Parchile Anovim Ve'atrois Shel Shibolim Loi ke'ein panim ika, v'loi ke'ein zriko mishtaberes ika. When you look at clusters of grapes or crowns of grains, those were not offered in the Beis HaMikdash. Maybe their products were, but they were not offered in the Beis HaMikdash. And you certainly don't have this zriko mishtaberes element. So why is it that they are considered forbidden? Omar Rava, Omar Ula, Kegoin Shebotzron Mitchila Lekach. The Parchile Anovim and the Atres Shel Shibolim, how did they become forbidden? It's because they were harvested, they were cut. They were cut from the ground, or cut from where they were growing, with the intention of serving the idol. Rashi says, Shebotzron mitchilo litzurich avodes kechavim uvevitzurasan avdol avodes kechavim. And through the actual harvesting action of cutting them, he was serving his idol. Davi kishovar makeo lefoneho didomi lezvicha. That in that sense, the severing of the grains or the clusters of grapes from their plant or from where they're growing is a breaking. It's a severing, just like the breaking of the stick. And we described above that the breaking of the stick is ke'ein zvicha, and therefore it becomes forbidden. it's worth repeating that this entire sugya was revolving around Shitas Rav, that the breaking of a stick is Kain Zvicha. We might want to note that there were other Shitas, we saw them in the previous shir, which featured the upper part of this Omid, that introduced Shitas Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, discussing with the case of Shachat Law Chagav, where someone slaughtered a locust to an Avodah Zarah. The Gemara had concluded that those Tanoim would not have viewed breaking the stick as sufficiently close to that which was done in the Beis HaMikdash. And it's likely to say that they would have agreed, according to the Maskon of the Gemara before, that the stick would not have become Osir because of this, its lack of similarity. However, Rav himself does look at the breaking of the stick as a type of, as a form of slaughtering, which is sufficiently similar to consider it Ke'ein Zvicha and Ke'ein Pnim. As you can see, we have a slash in the Gemara indicating that which follows is a new idea. We have a structural note in the outside margin, the Mivneh, in which we feature a bow tie with some colored in tips to it. They are Shtei She'elois, two questions, Be'inyin Zvichas Behemois L'Avodah Zarah, slaughtering animals to an idol. One, Balas Mum L'Avodah Zarah, the slaughtering of a blemished animal. And number two, Behema L'Markalis, slaughtering a behema to the Markalis idol. The Gemara, Amar Rabbi Avoh, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Minayin L'Zoveach Behema Balas Mum L'Avodah Kechavim Shu Potter. From where would we be able to determine or know that the slaughtering of a blemished animal to an idol is exempt? He's not considered in violation of Avodah Zarah. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Zoveach leElohim yacharam, bilti l'Hashem levadoi. That's the pasuk. Rashi adds, bilti l'Hashem, mashma sheroi l'Hashem hakosav medaber. The pasuk is describing that one who slaughters to idols that which would have been fit to Hashem, he is yacharam. He is to be destroyed. Lo osra Torah, the Gemara goes on to say, Lo osra Torah, lo ke'ein pnim. The Torah forbids only that which would have been fit to have been done in the Beis HaMikdash, and this guy comes along and worships an Avodah Zorah through that method. Havi bo Rava. Rava asks, Havi is a losh, an expression indicating a question. Bimai. The Bimai is, what kind of mum are we talking about? I lema be Dukin Sheba'ayin, if we're talking about a Dukin Sheba'ayin imperfection, that's a situation where there's a type of scratch on the eye surface. Hashto Livnei Noyach Chazio Legavoa Bebomadidhu Lavoides Kechove Mibaya. This imperfection that we'll henceforth refer to as Dukin Sheba'ayin, that type of thing is actually fit to be offered to HaKadosh Baruch Hu by a Gentile who wants to offer a sacrifice to the Almighty on his personal altar, which is called a Boma. And that's a totally acceptable thing. So if Dukin Sheba'ayin happens to be the example of Mum that Rabbi Yochanan was talking about, why in the world should he be exempt if you offer that type of blemished animal to an idol? That type of blemish would have been fit to the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Therefore, to an Avodah Zarah, would you have any question that it would not be considered fit? Fit, of course, with the resulting penalty. Ela, rather, we have to say that the Bahemos Balas Mum that would result in an exemption if offered to an Avodah Zarah is b'mechuser aver. It's missing a limb. Uchadu Rebbe Elazar, the Amar Rebbe Elazar, minayin l'mechuser aver shu osir l'vnei Noach. Based on Rebbe Elazar's teaching, from where do you know that a missing limb creature is forbidden for a Gentile to offer to the Almighty. So the Gemara now will go in and investigate this issue. But for our purposes, it's important to note that this is a conclusion. The conclusion being that the Balmum referred to above, that if one offers it to an idol, there would be exemption. We're talking about an animal that's missing a limb. The ensuing Gemara is actually a sugya that was featured earlier in this very Masichta. The issue being, and we've recorded this on the side under our Tat Nosei subtopic heading, we've written Minayin Shemechusar Ever Posel B'Hakrova Levnei Noach. From where do we know that a missing limb creature is unfit for a Gentile to offer to the Kodesh Baruch Hu? The Chiddush being that even though there is a certain level of leniency or a certain amount of flexibility that we have with regard to B'nei Noach Gentiles offering sacrifices, as we just saw, a Baal Mum as a Dukin Sheba'ayin is allowed to be offered to the Almighty by a Gentile, something which itself would not have been able to be brought at, by a Jew in the Beis HaMikdash. But a Ben Noach is able to bring a Dukin Sheba'ayin imperfection to the Almighty on his personal altar. Even so, the flexibility does not go so far as to include an animal missing a limb. So from where do we know that a missing limb creature is forbidden for a Ben Noach to offer as a sacrifice to the Almighty? We have now, as the Gemara unfolds, triangles changing their position rather rapidly. The triangle with the point facing up will be a suggestion, and with the point facing down will constitute a rejection. So if the question is, from where do we know that Mechusar Eiver is Osir Leven Noach? Shenemar, here is a suggestion. Umikol Hachai, Mikol Basar, Shnaye Mikol. The Kodesh Baruch Hu told Noach that he should bring animals into the ark. And we're going to darshan this pasuk that said, the pasuk said, Umikol Hachai, Omra Torah. The Torah, Kodesh Baruch Hu told Noach, Hove behema shechayin roshe evorin shela. Bring an animal whose limbs are intact, meaning that there is no missing limb. Rashi adds the important missing information, and that when citing the story involving Noach, it was known, it was clear that Noach would be offering, would eventually, upon exiting the ark after the flood, he would offer sacrifices. So in anticipation of the sacrifices he was going to offer, so the Kodesh Baruch Hu is telling him that these are the kinds of animals to bring in, to make sure you've got animals shechayin roshei voren shelo, that its limbs are intact. The Gemara asks, but hai umikol achai, that posuk miboya le limute trefa, that's coming to exclude a trefa, an animal who's got some type of we'll call it imperfection, such as holes in certain key organs that would result in the animal not living out till its full life expectancy. Trefa is a realm unto itself, different than mechusar roshei evorim. So, is it not so that the pasuk of Mikol HaChai is used to exclude trefa, that a trefa is unacceptable as a korban for a Ben Noach? So the Gemara answers, Milachios Zera Nafka. The exclusion of trefa has another source. It's excluded from the pasuk of Lachios Zera, which indicates or describes an animal that's not capable of bearing children. That which is not capable of bearing children, a trefa, for example, is not capable of bearing offspring. So trefa is excluded from this requirement, namely that an animal has to be able to produce zera, to produce offspring. That being the case, I have made the pasuk of Kol HaChai available for the purpose of excluding a Mechusar Eiver. Well, the Gemara asks, Ha nicha lemadomar trefa eino yoledes. We can use lahachio zera to exclude a trefa according to the opinion that holds that a trefa does not bear offspring. And as such, it wouldn't come under the requirement of lahachio zera. Ela lemadomar trefa yoledes. But according to the opinion that says a trefa is capable of producing offspring, my ikal lemeimar. I won't be able to use lahachio zera to exclude a trefa. I'll have to fall back on the mikol hachai pasuk for excluding a trefa, and I won't therefore have a source available for mechuser aver. The Gemara answers amar kro itcha, which equals bedoymin loch. The Kodesh Baruch Hu told Noach to bring animals into the teva with him itcha. And we're darshaning the word itcha as bedomin loch, animals that are similar to you, and that would exclude a trefa. So if similar to you, meaning healthy, not and don't bring in a trefa, we thereby free up the mikol hachai pasuk for the roshei evorim. Question: V'dilma Noach gufei trefa havi? Maybe Noach himself was a trefa. So when Kodesh Baruch Hu instructs him bring in things like you, that wouldn't exclude a trefa if Noach himself was a trefa. Gemara says, no, Noach wasn't a trefa. Tomim ksiv bei. Tomim means whole, complete. And a trefa is something that it has that is lacking. It has a hole in an organ. The Gemara asks, well, Dilma Tomim bedrachov. Maybe Tomim doesn't indicate non-trefa. Maybe he was a trefa, but Tomim means he was wholesome in his ways of life. The Gemara says, no, as far as wholesomeness is concerned, tzadik ksiv bei, that describes his behavior. Therefore, tamim would have to be something indicative of his not being a trefa. And the word itcha would then successfully exclude trefa. The Gemara says, well, dilma tamim bedrachov v'tzadik b'maisav. It could be that these two expressions, tamim and tzadik, are descriptions of behavior and personality, but they're not descriptions of anything physical, leaving still the possibility, the option, that he was a trefa. The Gemara says, Lo motzis amris de Noach gufei trefa havi. You can't say that Noach was a trefa. The Isalka Daitoch Noach Trefa Havi, if you were to think that Noach was a trefa, then what in effect is the Kodesh Baruch Hu saying? Omar le Rachmono de Kavosech Ail Shleimin Lotail. Do you think the Kodesh Baruch Hu is saying bring in trefa animals because they're like you and don't bring in healthy, complete animals? That's very unreasonable. Therefore, itcha. When the Almighty is telling Noach, bring in animals like you, he's basically acknowledging that Noach was a non-trefa, and bring in animals that are healthy, complete, and non-trefa. So itcha excludes the trefa, leaving available mikol hachai for the issue we were looking for, a source that mechuser eber is not acceptable. Hashto de nafka mi itcha, now that we have itcha for the purpose of excluding a trefa, Lahachios Zera Lomali. What role does the pasuk of Lahachios Zera play? Lahachios Zera was part of the requirements of the animals that Noach would have to bring into the ark. But I don't seem to have any role for that right now. The Gemara answers, I do. I me'itcha, had I just had the word me'itcha, true, it excludes a trefa, but havamina, I would have thought, that what Noach was instructed to do was to bring in animals to serve as company for him, to keep him company, so to speak. Well, that could be accomplished even if the animal is old or is sterile, namely incapable of procreation. If something is old or sterile, it's not a trefa, and that would have been acceptable if it's even if it were a zokin or soris. Komash malon lahachio zera. This pasuk comes to tell me the animals brought in are not only to keep you company, but they also have to be capable of producing offspring. And that's what I learned from lahachio zera, capable of producing offspring. Amar Rav Elazar, minayin l'sheichei behema l'makalis, shehu chayav. From where do I know that one who slaughters an animal to a makalis, that he is guilty of avodah zarah, he's guilty of idol worship? Now, the heart of this question is realizing that slaughtering animals was not the formal method of worshiping Markalis. So we're taking something that's a non-normal, an unusual method of service with regard to Markalis, and saying, even though it's not its usual method of service, of worship, nevertheless, if one slaughters an animal to the Markalis, he will be chayav. Shinemar, the Pasuk says, V'lo yizbuchu oid es zivcheihem la'si'irim. Im eino inyan l'kedarka, if this Pasuk, which is warning against the slaughtering of animals to all kinds of alien forces, if it's not here to teach me the prohibition of the normal way of service, because as far as the prohibition of serving idols in their normal way, dichtiv, there's another pasuk for that. That's echo yavdu hagoyim ho'elo es Elohim. That pasuk deals with the issue of normal service of idols, which is quite prohibited. What am I going to learn from v'lo yizbuchu oid es zivcheihem asirim? Teneo inyan. So we will refer that to the realm of l'shaloi kedarka. What does the Pasuk emphasize? It says, V'lo yizbechu. It says, no more that thou shalt not slaughter to these alien forces. So the Pasuk, in effect, the way the Gemara understands it is a warning against slaughtering to idols, even if slaughtering is not their normal way of service. The Gemara asks a question. We've indicated here a long question marking. You can see the kuf that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara. The question itself is rather long. It takes you till the second wide line on Amud Beis. The Gemara asks, "V'ha l'hachi hu da'asa?" Is the pasuk of "V'lo yizbichu oid es ivchein lasirim" for the purpose of shalo kedarka? Hai miboyale lichidatanya. I need it for that which is taught in the following Tanaic source. So what happens now in the Gemara is a rather long brisa that's presented. Toward the end of the brisa, this pasuk of "Alo yizbuchu oid es zivcheihem" appears, and we will see that it fills another role other than teaching the issue of service of idols through slaughtering, even though it's shelo kedarka. The brisa starts. Ad kan hu medaber bekotshim shekdishon b'sha'as isur habomos v'hikrivon b'sha'as isur habomos sharei oinshon amur shenemar ve'al pesach al moed lo hevioi v'chulei, and it says v'nichris ha'ish ahu mikerav amo. It might be advisable, before we continue further into this particular source, to note some of the features we have on the side. We have a double underline emphasizing two expressions here. We have Ad Kan. That's a reference to up till a certain point in the Parsha and the Torah dealing with the prohibition of slaughtering sacrifices outside the Beis Hamikdash. So you have the expressions that are double underlined, Ad Kan and Mikan V'Elech, meaning up till a certain point in the Parsha, it's dealing with one aspect of things, and from Mikan V'Elech, from that point on, it's dealing with other matters, with other elements. What are we talking about? So if we look under the Nosei heading in the outside margin, we'll gain a little bit more clarity. Chiyuvim al Shrutei Chutz. We'll be talking about the violation for slaughtering animal sacrifices outside the Beis HaMikdash. Number one, Ma Shehikdish B'Sha'as Heter Bomos. That which a person sanctified at a time in history when personal altars were still allowed. That was a time that existed, for example, after the destruction of the Mishkan and Shiloh, before the Beis HaMikdash was built by Shlomo HaMelech. So during that interim period, when the Mizbeach was located in Nov and Givon, those were places during that interim period, personal altars were mutter. So let us imagine the following. Someone was makdish, he sanctified an animal during the time that personal altars were allowed. And then, before slaughtering the animal, before offering it, the Beis HaMikdash was built. In such a case, if that person kept the animal around after he sanctified it till the time the Beis HaMikdash was built, and he slaughtered it outside the Beis HaMikdash, we will tell you, Oiver ba'aseh v'loy sa'aseh. He's in violation of a positive command and a negative command in the Torah. There's another scenario. Ma shehikdish b'shas iser bomos. A person who sanctified something after the Beis HaMikdash was already constructed. At that point, there's no allowance for personal altars. So if someone sanctified, dedicated an animal to as a korban, while there already was imposed the iser, the prohibition of personal altars, and he sacrifices that animal outside the Beis HaMikdash, not only is he in violation of the positive and the negative commands, he's also over nami b'kores. He's also chayav to suffer the penalty of kores. So as the Brisa opened up, it said up till a certain point in the Parsha dealing with Shchutei Chutz, the Torah was describing an animal that was slaughtered outside the Beis HaMikdash, but it was sanctified and dedicated at a time that was B'shas Iser Bomos, and he was Makrovit at a time of Iser Bomos. The subsequent psukim deal with a case of someone who slaughters outside the Beis HaMikdash something that was sanctified at a time that there was a heter bomas. So let's now start the brisa again from the top of the omid. Ad kan, we'll say the earlier psukim in the parsha. Medaber b'kodshim shehekdishon b'shas iser habomos v'ekrivon b'shas iser habomos. He sanctified and slaughtered an animal at the time that the Beis HaMikdash was already built, namely the time of iser bomos. So the earlier psukim were describing that sharei oinshon amur. The onsha, meaning their penalty of kores, was already revealed. Shneamar, v'el pesach oil moed lo hevioi. If one doesn't bring to the Mishkan, which is the parallel to the Beis HaMikdash, if he doesn't bring his korban, v'nichras ha'ish ahu mikerav amo, that person will suffer kores. Onesh shomanu. So that pasuk reveals the punishment. Azhora minayin, where is there a lav, a lo sa'aseh regarding this case? Talmud lomar, pen ta'ale oiloi secha. The word pen is explained in this bracketed section by Rabbi Ovin, that it means something, it's a negation, it's a negative command. After the brackets, you see it says Mikan v'Eilech, means from that point on in the Parsha, from Pasuk Zayin on, the psukim that deal with Shrutei Chutz describe a different situation of Korban background. Let's now read the bracketed section. The pasuk that had been cited was Pen Tale Eloisecha, and we're saying that that pasuk constitutes the Azhor, it constitutes a Losaseh for someone to slaughter such an animal as was described above, outside the Beis HaMikdash. Wherever you see one of these three words, and you see the word pen is in the list, Eino Ela Beloisase. That indicates that you're dealing with a negative command, a loisase. Mikan ve'elech, from Posuk Zion onwards in the Parsha, the Posuk says there, Velo Yizvichu Oid, Mikan ve'elech, hu medaber bekotshim shehigdishon b'shas heter habomos, ve'krivon b'shas iser habomos. These are animals that were sanctified at the time that they could have been brought on a personal altar. When he actually slaughtered them, the iser bamos had already set in. Shenemar leman asher yaviu bnei Yisrael ezivchem asher heim zovchim. Shehitarti loch kvar. The sacrifices alluded to in this pasuk were once allowed outside the Beis HaMikdash. Al pnei hasodeh. Melamed shekol hazoveach beboma b'shas iser habomos. This teaches me that anyone who slaughters sacrifices outside the Beis HaMikdash at the time that there is an iser bomos, malav akosuv kiluhu zoveach al pnei hasodeh. The pasuk that we read, it says that it's as if he slaughtered in a field. In other words, it was a wasted korban. The Heviyum Lashem, the same pasuk says, they shall be brought to the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Zu mitzvah asay. In other words, by not bringing it to the Beis HaMikdash, by not bringing these sacrifices, namely that which was dedicated at the time that there was a heter bamos, but he waited to offer it until the Beis HaMikdash was built. So if he does that kind of korban, if he brings that outside the Beis HaMikdash, he's in violation of this mitzvah saseh, the positive command of bring it to the Beis HaMikdash. U'mitzvas loisase minayin. From where do we know that he's in violation of a negative command as well? Talmud lomar v'lo yizbechu oid es zivcheim. This pasuk is of critical importance for our discussion, hence we've dashed underlined it. Yochol yehei onush koreis. Could it be that there would be an onush koreis for this scenario as well, namely for the scenario of one who was makdish a korban b'shas heter bamos and simply waited and sacrificed it after the Beis HaMikdash was built outside the Beis HaMikdash? So if he does that, he's in violation of a lo sase. Yochol yehei onush koreis. Is he also penalized with the koreis punishment? Talmud lomar, the posuk says, chukas oilom tie zois lohem. Zois lohem, namely ase and lo sase, zois is a limitation word. These things, an ase and a lo sase, that is what they are in violation of. Velo acheres lohem. But not anything more, not koreis. That's as far as animals that were sanctified when the bomos were allowed. Omar Rava. We have to review, though, that before we read Rava, the question comes to a climax. What's the question? And simply, the lo yizbechu oid es zifreim is used to teach me the lo sase involving this kind of korban, something that was dedicated b'shas heter bamos and slaughtered outside the Beis HaMikdash during iser bamos. So v'lo yizbechu oid is used up for this lav, and it's not available to teach me about shelo kedarka, the service of an idol through slaughtering when the slaughtering is not its normal way of service. The Gemara answers, we have a source for both things. Omar Rava, kri bei v'lo yizbechu. In other words, the lo in the pasuk that precedes the words yizbechu oid can be distributed, lo yizbechu and lo oid. So by distributing this word lo, I get two lavim, one concerning the shelo kedarka issue surrounding zvicha, and the second one is for the lav concerning this issue of shchutei chutz. Motzo berosho mo'ois ksus okelim harei elu mutoren. if one finds on the head of an idol money, clothing, or vessels, they are allowed. We're not assuming then that they were offered to the idol. Parchile anovim, atros shoshibolim, vienu shmonim v'siltos. If one finds any of these items, clusters of grapes, crowns of grains, wine, oil, or flour, the choldover shekayotzi bo kore v'gamizbeach, or any other substance that was offered on the altar, usher, if you find it on the head of an avodah zarah, so it would be prohibited. Minohani mili. We're looking here for a source of the distinctions taught in the Mishnah. Before we go further, let's take a look at our topic heading, the Nosei, Pritim Shnimtzim Eitzel Avodah Zarah, items found near an idol. Ezo Mehem Mutarim, which one of them are permissible? The Ezo Mehem Asurim, which ones are forbidden? We saw the Mishnah break them down into two lists. Mosk, Sus, and Kalim are permissible. They're apparently not considered offerings to the idol. And list two, the Parchile, Anovim, Matros, Shibolim, etc., they are forbidden. They're considered offerings to the idol. So from where do we know this? Minohani Mili, Omer Abchia Bar Yosef, Omer Avoshaya, Kosev Echad Omer, one Pasuk says, Vaitiru es Shikutsehem, V'es Gilulehem, Eitz V'Even, Kesef V'Zahav, Asher Imohem. Upo Kosev Echad Omer, another Pasuk says, Lo Sachmoid, Kesef V'Zahav, Alehem. In this second Pasuk, there is no mention of Eitz V'Even. Ha Ketad, how do you resolve these two Pasukim? The first Pasuk indicating that idols have eitz and even, they have wood and stone as well as silver and gold. The second pasuk says that idols have with them silver and gold, but no wood and stone. How do you resolve this discrepancy? Ha ketzad, imohem dumya de'alehem. Ma alehem dover shel noi, osur shena shel noi muter. Just like in the pasuk that says on them, what is mentioned in the pasuk that's the items that are on the idols? Well, kesef and zahav, gold, silver and gold are materials made for materials from which you make things of noi, things of beautification. Therefore, we say that just like alehem, just like in the pasuk that talks about things found on the idols, we're talking about things that are of a beautification nature. Af imohem dover shel noi aser, v'she'eno shel noi muter. Namely, if the wood and stone are formed into something of a beautification nature, then they will be prohibited. But if they're not, they're not prohibited. From this we see, therefore, things that are of a beautification nature, so they would be considered part of the Avodah Zarah, and hence prohibited. If it's of a non-beautification nature, then it would not be a problem. The Gemara asks, V'eimo alehem dumya dimohem. Maybe you should reason or say just the opposite. Ma imohem, just like in the pasuk that says imohem kol mashi mohem, anything that's with them, anything near the Avodah Zarah would be prohibited, because in that pasuk there was mention of eitz and even, and Rashi points out that stam eitz and even, unfashioned or just ordinary eitz and even, are not for beautification purposes. So we're saying here that just like imohem, we say anything that's with them, even non-beautification items, because in the pasuk of imohem we saw eitz and even referred to. So to af alehem kol ma shalehem. So too with regard to things found on the idols, what's prohibited? What will be forbidden? Anything that you find on them. Im kain, if this Emo approach, the approach that was taken by the Gemara, this the line just before is realistic, then Lo Yomar Alehem, I would have no need for the Alehem Pasuk. In the Alehem Pasuk, two items were mentioned. But if the determining factor is that which is mentioned in the Imohem Pasuk, well, all the materials were mentioned already in the Imohem Pasuk, including gold, silver, and gold. There would have been no reason to repeat silver and gold in a pasuk that's subsidiary to the pasuk that mentions those items and mentions more things as well. So, from the fact that you have two psukim, one pasuk more limiting than the other, we are forced to say that the limited pasuk is setting the tone. And in that limiting pasuk that mentions only two materials, gold and silver, it's setting the tone and saying that when are things forbidden? Only when they are of a decorative purpose, like your standard gold and silver would be. So too, other items, other materials, if they're going to be forbidden, they would have to be of a decorative nature. Something that would be offered to an avodah zarah, to an idol. When you look at the Mishnah, you notice things that are clearly not decorative, because by virtue of the fact that the Mishnah rules that they are mutter. And what are those? We have mos, ksus, and kalim. The Gemara now has a series of questions featuring each one of those expressions, mos, ksus, and kalim. You can see them in diamonds. It's a series of questions regarding the principle that was laid down, that only things of noi are prohibited, things of a beautification nature that are placed on the idol are prohibited. Is it not so that these items as well could be beautification for beautification purposes? Why then would they be mutter? Mo'os, the Gemara asks, Dovor shel noihu, cash, coins, are capable of being used for beautification purposes. So why are they mutter in the Mishnah? The Gemara answers, Amri debei Rabbi Yanai, in the yeshiva of Rabbi Yanai, they answered, Bekis kosher v'tolui lo b'tzavaro. The Mishnah's reference to cash isn't coins stringed up on a necklace, but rather it's a reference to coins in a pouch that's tied up and hung around the idol's neck. In that fashion, the coins are not serving for beautification purposes. Ksus, the Gemara asks, garments? Dover shel noihu. Clothing is something that could very well be beautification. So why does the Mishnah rule that if you find clothing by the idol, that they are mutter? Amri deber v'yanai, b'ksus mikupeles u'munachas lo al rosho. What the Mishnah is describing is folded clothing placed on its head. Well, that's not beautification. Hence, they are not prohibited. Kli, dover shel noihu. A vessel might very well be an ornament to the idol. Why does the Mishnah say that kalim that you find on their heads, on the idol's head, is mutter? Omar of Papa, deschifale mashchilta areshe. Deschifale, there is inverted on his head, a mashchilta, a type of basin or bowl, inverted on the idol's head. So he's wearing it, and he's not wearing this kli as headgear. It's rather as if the someone just flipped over a wash basin and stored it on the idol's head. Hence, it's not a dover shel noi, and that's why it's mutter. Omar of Asi bar Chia, kol shehu lifnim min hakilkalin. The word kilkalin is a reference to a mechitza, like the word kloyim. Kloyim are curtains. It's sort of an aberration of the word, a deliberate contortion of the word, because we're talking about avodah zarah. So kilkalin, something mekulkal, something is ruined. We're using the word of mekulkal, of kilkalin, to describe a curtain. But for our purposes, just realize that kilkalin is a reference to a mechitza. So we're saying that anything that's found within the confines of the curtains that surround an idol afilu mayim umelach osir, even water and salt, which are things that are generally they're not for beautification purposes, mayim and melach. They're ke'en pnim. Mayim and melach are used in the Beis HaMikdash, but they're not there for beautification purposes. But since you found the mayim and melach within the curtains surrounding the idol, they're osir. And it's pointed out that they're osir midin takruvis avodas kechavim. Chutz lekilkalin, if you found items outside the curtains surrounding the avodah zarah, so then it depends. Dovar shel noy osir, something that's there for beautification purposes, it will be osir, and that's learned from the pasuk that we saw before, asher imohen, things that are with the idol. Provided it's beautification, it becomes osir. She'eino shel noi, if you have something that's not of a beautification nature and it's outside the curtains, mutter. It's explained that if something were an offering to the Avodah Zarah, it wouldn't be left outside the curtains surrounding the idol. Omar Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina Naktinon, we have a tradition, ein kilkalin lo lepor velo lemarkalis. Gemara asks, Lamai, what do you mean ein kilkalin to these things? E lema the afilu pnim kechutz domi vishori, that even items that are within the curtains, when you're dealing with por and kakalis and markalis, even if it's within the curtains, and you tell me now ein kilkalin for these things, and therefore it's ke'ilu, it's outside, and therefore mutter. As we saw before, things that are chutz lekilkalin, they are allowed. Well, that's hard to believe. Hashta pure mefarin kamei. When it comes to the poor, people act in an abominable, they expose themselves and defecate themselves in front of it. That's considered worship. Mayim umelach lo mekarvin lei. If everything goes when it comes to par, then certainly water and salt are things that they would offer it. Therefore, to suggest that mayim and melach, if they're found inside the curtains, they would be considered as if outside and not usher, that's hard to believe. We're talking about, of course, the pa'or. Elo, so what must be the pshat in this tradition that Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina communicated? He said, let's just go over it, he said, Naktinon ein kilkalin lo por lo markles. What does he mean? Elo, afilu chutz, even if something is outside the curtains, kipnim domi v'osir, even if it's non-beautifying, it would be considered as if it were in the curtains, and therefore osir. Let's take a look at Rashi. There's a Rashi that says Hilkoch shel, or let's actually read further in the Rashi. She'eino shel noi mutter. V'afilu hu ke'ein pnim. To chutz lekilkalin lo manchi takruves. There's another Rashi we'd like to read. Four lines from the end of the narrow lines, afilu chutz kipnim domi. When dealing with the por and markalis, we said ein kilkalin lepor and markalis. We mean that even outside is considered inside, umitzar, and it will become forbidden. Those substances that one finds outside the curtains surrounding the por, shrei kol avoidoso derech bizoyon. The whole method of service of the Pa'or and the Markalis was one of a disparaging nature, and yet that's the way it was served. The Kilkalin Havitznius L'Chavod. The purpose of curtains is for modesty and honor. However, Pa'or doesn't require modesty and honor. Hilkoch Lo Shaychi Bei. Kilkalin have no role to play by the Pa'or, the Lo Mifsiki, and they don't serve as a separation. Therefore, if you happen to have a pa'or idol, even if it were surrounded by curtains, the curtains would be viewed as non-existent. And therefore, there's no distinction to be made between inside and outside. And therefore, things like Mayim and Melach, even if they're found outside the curtains, in the case of Por, they would be prohibited. Avodis Kochavim, the Mishnah says, Shehoyo lo gina umerchotz. Nehnin mehen sheloi betoiva. V'ein nehnin mehen betoiva. An idol that has a garden or a bathhouse next to it, you are allowed to benefit from the garden and bathhouse. Shelo betova means without paying. You can benefit provided you don't pay for them. However, you're not allowed to benefit from them if you are paying. Hoya shelo v'shel acherim, if the bathhouse belongs to the idol and to others, Nenin mehen bein betoiva vishelo betoiva. It would be mutter to use those facilities since they're jointly held by non-idolatrous forces. You could benefit and pay as well. Pay for the benefit. Avodis kochavim shelo vit kochavim asur miad. An idol owned by a Gentile is asur immediately. Immediately meaning as soon as it's constructed. Vishel Yisrael ein asura ad sheteaved. An idol owned by a Jew does not become usur until it's actually worshipped. We have a house form featured here, and on the outside margin we have a mivneh, a structural note. Shnei lishonos bedivrei Abaye, two versions within Abaye, beinyan hano betoiva v'shelo betova, regarding this issue of benefiting betova and shelo betova. The expressions betova and shelo betova, Rashi had mentioned in his Pirush on the Mishnah, on the first line under the Gemara, shelo yalu schar lakoimrim, that one should not pay money to the priests. The Rashi adds that one is allowed to benefit provided he doesn't pay. How can you benefit from a merchatz that was set up for the idol? The Ein Hekdish L'Avodas Kochavim, it's not considered dedicated because the concept of dedication does not apply to idols. It applies to someone who wants to make a dedication to the Beis HaMikdash, so the dedication becomes something usur to benefit from because it's been dedicated Beis HaMikdash. However, dedications to idols, that is something that does not exist. It doesn't have any halachic ramifications because the concept of Hekdish does not apply when dealing with idols. Therefore, one can benefit from items that were dedicated, so to speak, to the idol, the garden or the bathhouse, provided he doesn't pay cash to the priests. Turning to the Gemara, Omar Abaye, betoiva equals betoivas koimrim, meaning paying to the priests. Shelo betoiva equals shelo betoivas koimrim. La fuke toivas oivdeha deshori. This is to the exclusion of a situation where a person would use the bathhouse and pay ovdeha. Ovdeha are people that may be servicing the idol, but they are not priests to the idol. So if you pay those people, that wouldn't be would not be catastrophic, wouldn't be a problem. Iko demasni lo asefa. There are those that apply Abaye's teaching to the second example in the Mishnah, namely hoyo shelo v'shel acherim. The bathhouse was jointly owned by the idol and by commoners. Nenin mehen betoiva v'sheloi betoiva. Amar Abaye, betoiva equals betoivas acherim, that you're allowed to pay provided you're paying others. Shelo betoiva equals shelo betoivas komrim, you'd be allowed to benefit provided you don't pay the priests. You'll notice that the second case, the second lashon featuring the second case, was a bathhouse that was jointly held. And even though it was jointly held, one was not allowed to pay the priests. If you would say that there's a restriction in paying the priests concerning something that's jointly held, all the more so if it was solely the idol's bathhouse, would it be usher to pay the priests. Man demasni asefa, one who teaches the second lashon, which is makbid, even in the sefa of shelo ye b'toivas hakoymrim, kol shekein aresha, then all the more so he would be restrictive within the resha, where you had a bathhouse that was owned solely by the avodah zarah. Uman demasni aresha, one who teaches that shelo, that you must, if you're going to use the bathhouse, it has to be shelo b'tova in the resha case, the resha case being an item owned completely by the idol. Aval asefa, however, in the sefa case, kevan de'iko achirim b'hada, since the item is owned jointly by commoners, by non-idols, by a non-idol factor, afilu b'tovas kermim nami shabri domi, would have thought, or I would say, because we're working according to the first man de Omar, that when it comes, the first the one who taught it on the Reisha, he was speaking about a restriction only in the case of something owned completely by the Avodah Zarah, but something that was jointly held, he would say you can pay even the priests. Avodis kechavim shel oved kechavim asura miyad. An idol owned by a Gentile is forbidden immediately upon its construction, not having to wait till it's worshipped. Masnisin moni. The Mishnah is according to whom? Rabbi Akiva hi. Desanya. We have a Tanaic source. Abe tabdun es kol hamakoymos asher avdu shom hagoyim. Pasuk says, one shall destroy all of the makoymos that the goyim worshipped. What is this pasuk really referring to? The pasuk is talking about vessels that were used in the service of idols. Yochol asaum velo gomrum, is the prohibition here concerning things that were made but not completed, or gomrum velo hevium, they were completed but not brought to the idol. Hevium velo nishtamshuvem, they may have been brought but not actually used. Yochol yu asurim, are these vessels prohibited? Talmud lomar sher avdu sham hagoyim, she'ein asurim ad she'avdu. The pasuk is telling us that the prohibition sets in only once they are, the idol is served with these vessels. Mikan omru, from here we conclude, avodas kechavim shel oved kechavim eino asur ad she'teoved. The idol owned by a Gentile is forbidden only once it's worshipped. Shel Yisrael, asura miyad, divrei Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Akiva omer, chiluf hadvarim. Rabbi Akiva suggests the opposite. Avodas kechavim, shel oved kechavim asura miyad. If it's owned by a Gentile, it's forbidden immediately upon completion. Shel Yisrael, ad she'teoved. When it comes to a Jew's idol, it does not become forbidden until it's actually worshipped. Omar Mar, we now quote from what we saw above. Bekelim shenishtamshu bohen lavodis kechavim akosu medaber. The pasuk that said, thou shalt destroy all of the makoimus, is a reference to the vessels that were used in service of an idol. But the Gemara asks, how makoimus ksiv? But the pasuk says, places. Im ein o inil makoimus delo mitzri. If the pasuk cannot be taken literally, because the places are something that don't become forbidden. A place is the ground. Dichtiv Eloheim al Horim. The pasuk says their gods are on the mountains. Velohem Horim Eloheim. The mountains themselves don't become gods. Namely, the ground itself doesn't become forbidden. So there could not be any command to destroy that which is mutter. Therefore, Teneu Inyan Lekelim. Therefore, we have a right to ascribe this pasuk of Abe Tavdun Eskal Mekomos as a reference to vessels, that those are to be destroyed. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.